horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full-service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Can you hear them talking about us, telling lies? Is that a surprise? Can you see them, see right through them? They have a shield, nothing must be revealed. It doesn't matter what they say. No one listens.
We're back. Hour two, about 15 minutes in, almost 20 in, actually. And Rich Migliori swings by for his first visit of the 2023 calendar season. As I mentioned on Twitter, the show enters its 19th year here on Sirius XM. Started in 2015, or 2005. What am I talking about? 2005. And Richie, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Steve. It was a fun 11, I think I had 11 straight days off. I think you had like 12.
And, yep.
It was Christmas was really, really nice. All of my children were home and the new grandbaby was here. And Carmella and I did a lot of cooking, but we had a lot of fun.
Well, and in addition, I'm glad you mentioned Mel and the baby. Baby's first Christmas. Did you get a baby's first Christmas ornament?
Of course, yeah, yeah. Actually, Carmella had made with her picture on it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, one for Jessica's parents and obviously one for Joseph and Jessica as well. And,
wow, sweet.
It was good. And so now, you know, Carmella is very difficult for me to buy for. And I went up to Saratoga, had an idea about something at Lyrical Ballad. Didn't have what I was looking for. Walked around town. Actually, even went through Boston Spa because there was like a neat antique store there that I wanted to check out. I'm coming up blank. So I go into Uncommon Grounds for a hot chocolate. come out, there's a little art gallery pretty much right next door. So I walk in there, and of course, obviously being Saratoga, a lot of horse art, and there's this little oil painting called Beach Chat, and it's two women on, you know, like beach chairs on, you know, out on the, by the ocean with their sun hats on and stuff. And it was Carmela and her sister Anna, who unfortunately passed away 2 years ago. But it looked exactly like them.
Oh, wow.
Like it was uncanny. So I bought that and I hit it out of the park. That was the tears flowed, and it actually really, like, I took a picture of it and I texted it to my consigliere, Gabrielle, my daughter. It's like, you got to get that. So it was a gift from me and all of the kids. And, you know, it was just one of the things. I just walked into it, just got very lucky.
That's perfect. That's perfect. I responded. I filed something away mentally that Tina had said, and got her a jewelry piece that she was delighted with. So we both did it. And you also, I just realized we haven't spoken. So this is my chance for those that didn't see it on Twitter. I thought I hit it out of the park with my response to your wedding photo.
Remind me, I'm sorry.
Oh my God! You put up that picture of you and Carmela, and she's got the, you know, she's got the big hair going. And I responded, I responded with the picture of Nick Cage and Cher from Moonstruck. It was identical.
It was, yes, you did. That was awesome. That was so funny.
I got the biggest kick out of that, and everybody right away responded. And in fact, I should go find this. Somebody, there was a couple of really good responses. Somebody said, thank you. what's the family's?
Castorini.
Castorini. Thank you, Mrs. Castorini. I would love a bowl of oatmeal. And then I came back with my favorite line from 2 seconds later when sister-in-law, it's Johnny Camerari.
Yes. Nah, that was very good. Very funny. It's, you know, it's so funny too, because like we were so young. I mean, you know, I was 21 years old when I got married. I mean, it, you know, it reminded me, because someone said, like, you don't look like you're old enough to get a driver's license. I got pulled over on the Northway and had forgotten my wallet when I was like 17. And the police, the trooper didn't think I was old enough to drive.
Sure.
He thought like I took my parents' car or something. Then he made me lock it up, and he was nice. I mean, I got in the car with him. He's you know, running a check to see whose car it is. And then he realized who I was, and he and I became buddies. I used to get trooper cards from him all the time, but he really didn't think I was old enough to drive.
That is great. And for those of you that, it's funny, everybody at the racetrack has got trooper cards. That's hysterical.
We're big with the law enforcement.
Well, Siaka told you that story about.
Not sure.
Oh my God, the traffic stop. There was a sobriety stop in Saratoga. And I'm going to forget his pal's name that he's known forever, that he gets the trooper cards from. And so they get to the Andy, he's retired now, maybe an Irish name. And so they had been out to dinner. Gary and Joe had been out to their driving home, and Gary had had a couple of glasses of wine as he's been known to do. And so he's like a little ledgy now. And so when he gets his turn, he says to the cop that leans in the window, he says, he canceled the license. He said, I'm friends with Andy. I can't remember his last name. And so the cop says, oh, yeah? And the cop stands up and he yells over, Andy, this guy says he knows you.
That's great. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so he comes over. And, you know, he said, oh, pull over. He hadn't seen him yet that season or something, I think. Anyway, that whenever I hear those kinds of stories, and you mentioned the trooper card, my favorite sobriety stop story goes to Montreal, where I was crossing town to get to Saint-Laurent. I lived over by Atwater. by the forum. And there's a road called Dr. Penfield that cuts across McGill. And there's a sobriety stop. And there were four of us in the car, me and my girlfriend and my friend Elliot, who owns Dunn's Smoke Meat, and his girlfriend Sylvie. And so the cop, big French-Canadian cop, leans in the window and says, "Too drunk to drive?" And I said, not yet. he starts to laugh. He said, "Okay, have a good night."
Oh, that's funny. they had one a few years ago in Saratoga. On the way back from Nove, my brother Michael and I went to dinner, and he wasn't drinking at all. You know, I had my wine, and he had, he drank soda. And we get up there, and the guy says, "You've been drinking tonight?" And my brother, being a clown, goes, "Yeah, I had like five." And the guy goes, "All right, step out of the car." He goes, "Coca-Cola's." Well, the guy didn't think it was funny. Now we're standing on the side of the road while he's getting, like, and my brother did not drink. But now people are going from the racetrack, from Nove or Wishinwell, and I'm standing there. I'm like, "You had to be a clown. You just had to be a clown."
That's great. Everybody's looking out the window as they drive by. "Hey, that's Migliori."
Yeah, exactly. But the next day, I spent the night in the Hooskow.
Oh, that's hysterical. Well, we got one before we touch on a couple of racing from the last couple of weeks. I got to follow up with what I went into the break with Rich. I got about 15 minutes before Gary Young joins us. The situation in the football game last night that was so shocking and upsetting and distressing. I mean, there were so many people that I was reading, on social media that couldn't go to sleep, and that included me. I mean, we were kind of waiting for some good news and some update, and his marketing manager, in fact, had the most I would say comforting tweet that when he said that his vital signs had returned to normal and that they had him sedated to let him sleep and that he was intubated. But I got to tell you, as I sat there and watched the coverage and I watched as Susie Colbert and the other broadcasters and everybody involved really struggled. I mean, to explain the situation, I think more because they didn't have information at their fingertips, which was shocking in itself that the NFL was, we talk about us being ill-prepared for circumstances. The NFL was, shockingly ham-handed dealing with this. But it just occurred to me as I kind of catalogued in my brain other professional sport incidents, and Tony Conigliaro comes to mind, when Jack Hamilton hit him, and Mark Howe, was severely injured sliding into a net, and there was the Sabres goalie who got slashed across the
throat. Oh my God!
Unbelievable scene. There's been one on-field death in NFL history, and I'd forgotten about it actually from 1971. It of a heart attack as it happens. So I all of that was rifling through my head, Rich, and I was thinking to myself, professional sports goes 50, 75, 100 years without a fatality. We go 6 months because there's an average of two fatalities a year among jockeys riding in the afternoons. And that is since World War II. Every year, two jockeys are killed. Every year. And that doesn't even include permanently disabled. Daryl Stingley, of course, NFL, and Nick Buonaconte's son, Mark. But that's not with us in racing, it's not a random occurrence. It's every single, as I said, every inning, every shift, every snap of the ball for racing has potential for a fatality. Every single one, every horse, every rider, every oval, every day.
Yeah, it's, and you know, I think the number is somewhere over 1,300, just over 1,300 licensed jockeys in North America, and I think it's something like 1,100 that you would consider active, you know, that actually ride on a fairly consistent basis, and you're averaging two, and that's not, you know, including exercise riders and the people that, you know, handle the horses. You know, and when an accident happens in a race, there's no timeout. There's no, you know, stoppage of play. The race goes on. You know, I unfortunately, obviously, you know, Mike Venezia comes to mind instantly, who is, you know, a dear friend who we lost, you know, back in 88. And a few years before that, I was actually involved in the accident at Amato Creditio. You know, went down and right in front of me, and I had no chance to miss him. And my horse, you know, that was a rough one. That was one it took a while to kind of put behind me. And, you know, you think what happened to Cindy last year, George's wife, Cindy Weaver, right? You know, it's a tough game. I mean, what happened last night was, I mean, it was shocking. I just felt so bad for, you know, everybody involved. And, you know, it happened. Do you remember what happened to Chris Pronger? He got hit with a slap shot in the chest, and he had a very similar.
Yeah.
And he had, you know, the arrhythmia, and he dropped, and they got him, you know, back right away. It wasn't as long a period as this was last night. He was back playing within, like, I think like a month, if I'm not mistaken. So all we can do is pray for that young man. He seems like a tremendous human being, you know, with his toy drives and what he's doing for communities. You know, I mean, that this is somebody that didn't forget where he came from, and you know, obviously a good human being. It was shocking. It was tough, but you know, this is something I've talked to young riders about all the time, and you know, one rider I represented, trying to explain to them that for every rider, there's a last ride. Just like for every baseball player, there's a last at bat, or, you know, football player, there's a last play. The difference is that the vast majority of jockeys don't know it's going to be their last ride. Where, you know, a baseball player probably plans on retiring, or, you know, football player more so. Not obviously everybody, I'm generalizing, but, you know, and I told this one young rider, I hope for you, you're like Jerry Bailey, Pat Day, you know, Chris McCarron, that you decide, you know, when it's enough. But vast majority don't get to make that decision, and they walk out of the room not knowing that that's the last time they're going to get to do that. And you owe it to yourself to be the absolute best you can be, because you have a shelf life, and one day it's going to be over. And when it's over, you can't have a do-over. You can't say, you know, I'm going to want to go back and do this. It's over. It's done. That's one of the things that kept me, you know, like, I got very depressed for a long time when I couldn't ride anymore. But the thing that helped pull me out of it was, I honestly, Steve, could look in the mirror and say, I did the best I could with the ability God gave me. I made the most of whatever talents I had. I worked hard at it. I never took it for granted. And I think if I hadn't, I don't know that I might have ever pulled out of that the way I felt. But the fact that I could say that with honesty to myself, that, hey, you know what? You did absolutely the best you could where I came from. You know, it wasn't jockey country. Graves in Brooklyn, I don't know a lot of jockeys come out of there. And the path that I took and how I got to the track, and obviously Steve Orbit. So, you know, you bring up a great point that, though, like, you just never know. You don't know. And you can't live with that in your head. You know, you just go out there and do what you do, but it's a stark reality.
No, exactly. And you and Tony, and particularly because you guys had longevity and had extensive careers, you know, with 10,000 wins between you. There's any number of names to bring up on this topic, and strangely, there's three that come to mind, and I'm focusing on New York for whatever reason, but in terms of a Hall of Famer, Ramon, and you know, they could have, I can tell you, having been at the Eclipse Awards that night, when all of us were uncertain if he was going to make it through the night, it was the most eerie and unsettling circumstance. I mean, yeah. Where everybody was sneaking out and making phone calls and back and forth, and it was unbelievable, not knowing where things stood. Two names, Rich, that nobody brings up: Jose Espinoza and Raul Rojas.
Yeah, yep, and both, you know, head injuries, and Raul with his neck too. You know, I was in the winner's circle that day, you know, doing TV when Jose went down, and I ran across and I got to him before he was even conscious. And the thing is, when you get knocked out like that, when you wake up, you're confused. You don't know where you're at. And a lot of times you don't even remember going out to ride the race, you know. And so I wanted to be there with him when he woke up, like just a, you know, a steadying hand, like, hey, you know. And he got busted up, his face, that was a tough one. A kid ran out there that was working for Shatino with me. I'm drawing a blank on his name, and he wound up passing out. I mean, that was a rough one. And you know, I got to see him over the summer. He looks like he's doing pretty well. He was actually at the races in Saratoga, Jose. And you know, listen, his brother, Victor, obviously Kentucky Derby, he's Hall of Famer. Jose, to me, he was just as good a rider, if not better. You know, he maybe didn't get the same opportunities, but, man, you want to talk about that guy. He was strong. He was smart. He put horses in good spots. He was a really good rider.
Rick Wilson,
yeah. Yep, another one. You know, a lot over the years. And then you know, there's riders that couldn't take the shock of the, you know, the first bad one. You know, that even though it wasn't irreparable physical damage, the mental aspect of it, of being able to, you know, put it behind you and say, all right, you know, that's part of it, and keep going. You know, it's difficult. You know, I remember, you know, 88, you can look at the Rescue 911 on YouTube, coming back. Now, this is the beauty of youth, right? I was 23 years old, and I basically thought, if that didn't kill me, I can't die. I was hitting pockets and holes. Nick Santagata and I are dear friends. And I pulled my way up inside of him, like, within a few weeks back of that accident. And he come back to the room screaming at me, you got to stop running in these golf holes, you know. But I just, that was my mindset. I just didn't think. Now, I said a MIGism the other day, and I hope this doesn't come off. It's a yogiism, but I went out to the track in the morning. I stayed at Belmont, went out early. It was, you know, just chatting with people. And, you know, a lot of people always say, you look like you could still ride, you know, and I'm 145 pounds, right? So, and I said, well, even if I, you know, I mean, even if I could make the weight, I said, I couldn't with my back and spine. You know, I've been told that, you know, another accident, I'm looking at, you know, potentially being paralyzed. And I said, if I, you know, it was like break a collarbone or an arm or a leg or die, I said, I could live with dying. And after I said it, I could live with dying. That's something Yogi Berra would have said.
It's a MIGism. That's a good one. That'll go. That'll work.
I started laughing at myself. I said, did you just really say that? Like, it just.
I love it. Well, I knew that it was a natural topic for you, I'm kind of not really watching carefully for updates, I don't see any bad news, at least.
I actually just, I Googled it right before I came on with you to see if there was any update, and I didn't see any update. It doesn't sound like anything's changed, but... Yeah, I mean, it was tough to watch. And then, you know, the only thing I think about, too, is, like, you know, his mom was there, you know, family. Like, it's just got to be, like, because it's such a helpless feeling, you know. I remember I was riding Thunder Rumble, like that weekend in the Saratoga Cup, and like the Wednesday before Carmella was pregnant with Phillip, and I went down at in front in a 12 horse field on the turf. Actually, Eddie Maple's horse kicked me for about a 16th of a mile. I just got caught up underneath him, and you know, that wanting to get up and I couldn't, and you know, because I know that she's at the races with Joseph that day, and she almost went into labor. I mean, you know, like, you know, the shock and the panic of seeing that. And now that was the first meet they made Black Jackets mandatory. And I was the biggest, I had the biggest opposition for it. I didn't want any part of it. And after that, I was like, oh, these things aren't so bad, you know?
Well, Rich, got a reach for Gary Young here, but nice. Varied visit to get the season going and racing, wading back into action. We got a $189,000 pick five carryover on Thursday as things resume, and coming off of a good 2022, and best wishes for a great 23.
Thank you, Steve. Happy New Year to you, all your listeners. Please convey the same to Gary for me. I haven't spoken to him in a long time, but all the best of everything for everyone in 2023.
MIG 4450, everybody, to get the season going. And we'll talk to Andy tomorrow as well. And by tomorrow, I bet Andy will have, he's probably already done the Thursday card. So we'll talk to him. That's a good point between him and Nick tomorrow. That'd be good. All right. We're going to get, so I guess I got to do the work myself in advance tomorrow for Thursday. As mentioned, Gary Young is going to join us to talk about the Malibu and Ava's win and what lies ahead. I mean, I think, you know, because of course of owner Amir Zidane, you know, there's probably some early season travel that might be expected or anticipated anyway. And, you know, there could be some very big assignments. And I'm going to get everything we need to know from Gary Young. Happy New Year.
How are you?
I'm great. How was it that I came out to L.A.? I was in L.A. a week, and you I don't get to see.
I don't know.
I didn't see you. No.
I mean, I'm still recovering from my rotator cuff surgery, so I'm not out and about as much as I normally am. But I don't know. That's a pretty long time for you and I to be in the same town.
Well, I should have. That's my fault. Although Jim Cassidy, did you hear what Jim said about you?
No.
He said you're the biggest baby on two feet.
Well. those Yankee fans are still trying to get over last year.
He was so funny. I ended up with him live on the air. In fact, I couldn't get rid of him. He hadn't been on in a couple of years, and he ended up. I had to like tear the mic out of his hands.
It was like a filibuster.
It was. That's exactly right. And then he spilled coffee all over my PPs.
Did he?
Yeah. Yeah, give him some crap. But you should really. I'm surprised it didn't get back to you because I figured I would hear from you within about 24 hours that Cassidy says that you know you're not a great patient.
The older you get, the longer the
rehab.
Yeah,
no doubt. Well, in the meantime, one thing that had to make you feel pretty good was Taba's Malibu. Congratulations to you and Emmer and Baffert.
You know, he kind of gives me some gray hairs every time he runs because he doesn't exactly drag the jock up there like I drag Bailey up there and stuff like that. But he definitely seems to know when it's time to kick in, and when he kicks it in like a pretty good horse. And you know, he's made us all very proud. Baffert's done a very, very, very good job with the horse. And the horse has been a very good, patient. I mean, when we crammed the three races in a hurry into him and he ran poorly in the Derby, you know, it was a concern to me and other people that, you know, how he would come back, but he's came back with an utter vengeance, and he's made us very proud of him. He really has.
Talk about the turn back to the 7/8, and what transpired between the Breeders' Cup Classic try, and he hadn't been one turn since his debut.
Well, it made for a good bridge between that and his next race, wherever his next race may be. And because he isn't such a brilliant workhorse, to have, something in between instead of coming off a 4-month layoff kind of made sense. The Malibu is a very prestigious race and it would be, and it's a very good race to have on his stallion resume when he goes off to stud. And, it gives him three grade ones for the year. What that does for him or not, we're going to find out here in a little while, but, it does give him three grade ones it's a very prestigious race. No, it's right in our backyard. We didn't have to ship for it or anything. We took a swing at it. I'm sure his preferred race is probably running longer where the pace isn't near as fast and he doesn't need near the coaxing to stay up in the race like he did the other day. But when you're the best horse and you're trained to the minute for the race, and Mike knows them very well, you can usually get the job done.
Well, and he, finishing up, he obviously started to, started to edge clear. Forbidden Kingdom ran very well in here to be second. And
wild. If someone said to you at the quarter pole when they were swarming up on him that Forbidden Kingdom would run second, you'd have told them, you're absolutely crazy, but he did.
No, he stayed on nicely. Hoist the Gold was at his throat, and Nakatomi came running very late. He went off at 2-5. I mean, that's a different kind of pressure, actually, 2-5.
Yeah. When you're that short a price, nothing less than an authoritative victory will do.
106 buyer as well, which is notable. Obviously, it had bigger numbers going two turns, the 108 in the Pennsylvania Derby and the 110 behind Fight Line. On the sheets, he's running, negative ones with alacrity now. You talked about setting him up for what's next. What do you and Ammer foresee, Gary?
I don't, we're going to put our heads together. Ammer's on the board at the Saudi Cup. We ran very good with Country Grammar last year. And Country Grammar also did us proud on Saturday, and he's going to be heading over there. But we might take Taba also, but that decision has not been made yet. But there would be a good chance of that happening, but there's been no final decision yet.
Well, and of course, Country Grammar, having made the trip to both Saudi and to Dubai last year, and has come back. It's funny thinking about the older horse division, Gary. And when I put the votes in, obviously Flight Line, Life is Good, and then for me, Olympiad was third. But here's a horse that. I guess the big win came in Dubai, obviously. And then, you know, he did finish up the year with the San Antonio and had three, you know, the 3 seconds otherwise. But he's going to come back. How old is he now? Is he six?
He's six.
Six.
You know, he's been a very good soldier for us. You know, the partners, Windstar and the other gentleman who Selks he ran in the other day, the horses, they've been very good partners. And you know, he's kind of he's just an old throwback of a horse. I mean, you know, he doesn't work that great usually, but when we worked him out of the gate for the race, he just had his gate work was like, what the heck was that, you know? And he ran to that race. I mean, it was no fault of Frankie's or anyone, but I mean, he was out in the parking lot the whole race and still blew him off the field, you know? You know, really good race. You know, he's on the track galloping yesterday. Looked good, and you know, it's been a very, very solid representative for the stable. He really has.
Well, and one thing, he's not necessarily mile and an eighth has never been his distance. I think it was his first win at a mile and an eighth.
You know, he's usually just getting warmed up.
Exactly. I mean, a real kind of old fashioned mile and a, you know, a real classic distance type horse.
Yes.
Well, I do have to ask, I mean, in terms of Tay's campaign, and you talk about, you know, going from here, and he's a gun runner. I mean, he's going to be attractive as a stallion prospect. That not a concern, but, is a race like the Met Mile on the docket?
You know, it's a very big race as far as the stallion and stuff like that. And I mean, it could be, you know, well, a lot depends on where his next race is and everything, but the Met Mile could be a very, you know, that could be a type of race. Yes.
All right. Well, in the meantime, there's the two, you know, the veteran older horse in Country Grammar and Taba, who ends his 3-year-old season. And you alluded to the Eclipse vote. They got to go in about 4 hours, 3 o'clock deadline. I Gary, I'll tell you point blank. I voted for Epicenter first, Taba second, Cyber Knife third. I thought Epicenter had a championship campaign. I mean, Taba had a very nice campaign, and you mentioned the three grade ones, but it just felt like, you know, Epicenter had the advantage when you fold in the, you know, the Preakness and the Travis win. It's, you know, it's hard.
It is. I mean, he was a very solid performer all year long. He was. So, you know what? I would hope it wouldn't be as lopsided as last year's political contest was.
I didn't hear much of that. I haven't heard much of that.
I mean, Medina not winning last year was disappointing. The margin of defeat was it was a bitter slap in the face. I thought, that's just my opinion. I know Epicenter had a very good campaign. If he wins, they'll take my hat off to him. When one horse has one grade one win and another horse has three grade one wins, it's not supposed to be overly lopsided. I will accept losing to him if that's the way it comes down. But when one horse has one grade one win and he's defeating a horse for the Eclipse Award with three grade one wins, it's not supposed to be lopsided.
I don't think it will be. I I don't think it will be, because there's just been, I mean, you must have seen the chatter immediately after the Malibu. I mean, there was a groundswell, actually, of table support.
Yeah, yeah. How many of those people have votes is another question.
That I can't answer exactly without, you know, without sifting through the tweets. In addition to the older horses, the 4-year-old and the 6-year-old, let's talk about the 3-year-old scare, because obviously, you know, the Arabian pair, the Lion Knight, and also we should probably get an update on Hijazi too.
Jazzy's coming back. He worked really good the other day, and we're looking for a maiden race for him. Still haven't given up on him at all. Lion went over, Arabian Lion went over to Los Alamitos, and we thought it was a layup, and it turned out to be an air ball. He's came out of the race, and we're looking forward to his next race. We feel he'll run better the next time, wherever that may be, wherever Bob puts him. Arabian Knight is training very forwardly. Again, no definite race has been picked out. Whatever Bob picks out is, he will, I'm sure he'll be a real factor in. But it's no secret that we have a lot of confidence in Arabian Knight as a horse. He's what he did on Breeders' Cup Saturday was not a surprise to us. And we think the sky is the limit for this horse. And we'll see. But this horse is he's about a month out when one of the first times from about a month out from the race, and he one of the first times Bob let him do a little bit more than he'd been doing. And after the work, he looked at me and says, there's a maiden race on Breeders' Cup Day. So, and he had to run back to the barn. So later on in the day, I looked up in the condition book and I saw the race. So the next morning, he says, remember, I told you there's a race on Breeders' Cup Day. And I said, yeah, I wish it wasn't 7/8. And he kind of looked at me and he like said, that's not going to matter. I said, I mean, it's like, yeah, whatever distance we run him, he was probably going to do what he did. And, it's just a very good, very effortless moving horse. And, we look forward to whatever happens.
That was one of the best performances of Breeders' Cup weekend. And he's Uncle Mo?
Yeah.
Uncle Mo.
There's no reason he shouldn't run long, and hopefully he will. We'll see.
Well, Gary, pretty nice position to be in with an Eclipse finalist. Taba, who maximized as many opportunities as possible off of a demanding start to the career. If you listed some of the more remarkable performances and accomplishments of the calendar year, him winning the Santa Anita Derby off the maiden, that was right up there.
It was. I mean, The Haskell, his lack of seasoning or however you want to state it, with all due respect to Cyberknife, his Taba kind of got himself beat in the Haskell. It was, it'd be interesting to see if that would change things at all as far as the awards and everything. But Taba, the Haskell was a bitter pill to swallow. Because he didn't he's fine now, but he didn't handle the kickback, and when Mike got him outside and it provided Cyberknife with a hole that he came through, it was a bitter defeat, and that would have been really nice to have on his resume. You know, announced. But, well, whatever happens, happens. We'll just go on.
Well, and you got plenty to work with. The Malibu winner and Pennsylvania Derby and, of course, the Santa Anita Derby, the three grade ones and narrow beat as well, of course. And nothing wrong with finishing your – or not finishing your three-year-old year, but you know, nothing wrong with having a Breeders' Cup Classic placement at three either against one of the best horses we've seen in the last, you know, 30, 40 years.
True.
Gary, true. Get healed up. They need you for the playoffs, or at least for the Holy Angels game.
You know, my fastball will take a few miles an hour off, but we'll see what we can do.
We'll get out to see you, I think, in February, and probably talk before that, though. Gary Young, always a pleasure. Congratulations to everybody, and great way to start the first day back of the broadcast year with one of our favorites. Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, Steve.
Gary Young, everybody. Gary Young Thoroughbreds on the website front to help you pick out bloodstock. You don't have to have a seven-figure budget for Gary to find you a nice horse. Doesn't hurt, but he picks out horses that don't cost that kind of money as well. Taylor, of course, 1.7, but Gary's picked out plenty of nice horses for any kind of budget. Top of the hour. Let's take that second break, actually, after Gary's visit, and we'll come back. Norm Cash, better known as Lynn. Lynn Cash is going to join us next. We'll have the annual conversation about the winningest horse of the previous year. And, you know, sometimes it's something of a, you know, less heralded or you know, under-known set of connections. But Lynn Cash has had had a fabulous year, including his first graded stake win and competing, you know, at a, you want to talk about a broad spectrum, right? I mean, from a horse like this that he claimed for 12.5 that proceeds to to win 15 times. Unbelievable. And actually, and I told you, 21 of his last 37, that was since... there was an 8-month layoff when Dane Kibiski had him, the PTK people, and came back from that layoff and actually won a nickel claimer at Belterra, and then they upped him to 12.5. And Lynn Cash grabbed him for 12.5. And that, you know, that's a significant... He had dropped from 30 when he got hurt, and had to take time off. He, in October of 20, had run for 30, came back for a nickel, and nobody took him. It was when he came back after the nickel win that he got taken for 12.5. An amazing story. 15-time winner, Beverly Park, Lynn Cash, next.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania. The